The poet, born Unitarian, evolved into an anti-Semitic Anglican, T.S. Eliot, said that April is the cruelest month, mixing memory with desire. And so in April, we think about those great and weighty events. We think about death and taxes. April is the cruelest month and has been for a long time because we think about our past, our history, we think about our present, and we look forward in various ways, both to our legacies and to when we end our time on this planet together. It's an uncomfortable month. It is a, to use a pun quite intentionally, a taxing month. April has always been a taxing month, but goes back into biblical times. While scholars may disagree on how accurate the Bible is in various places, when in the Gospel it says, "And a decree came out from Caesar Augustus that all the world should be taxed," that's probably true, because all the world being taxed is the ambition of everybody with some political power, today, yesterday, and tomorrow. It almost certainly, scholars agree, was not in December. December was a time for celebrating the birth of Saturn and of Mithra, so that's where Christmas got put. The Roman taxing was probably in April, because that's when you would tax people. It's after the planting, before the harvest, when the snow has started to melt and people can travel. That's a good time to go and check their crops, check their cash, and have them contribute to the general good of society. So we've always been doing taxing and always worked very hard to evade it and avoid it. Some of the greatest creative writing in America is done on tax returns. We are able to come up with adventures and business expenses that we never really knew that we had. It's really a boon for creative writing people everywhere. It's also for many people a game of how can I evade, how can I avoid, how can I push it just far enough not to get the attention of people who could really hurt me. You know, we talk about societies being guilt and shame cultures, where a guilt culture is, I feel guilty because I didn't pay my taxes. I haven't met that person yet. I have met people in the shame society, which is, I really don't want to get caught because the perp walk is really humiliating. And that's the way our tax system normally goes. We know that we are part of a society. And we know that we need to pool our resources. And it's maybe a game when we play it with the state. It's certainly a game and a traditional game in some parts of the world where we do know that if Italians paid all of their taxes, it would be about 140%, and because they build in noncompliance into the system. They also build vagueness into the system so that you could take the same information and give it to three different priests of taxation, and they would all come up with different interpretations as surely as religionists and theologians would come up with different interpretations of Scripture, which is to say we have a priesthood called accountants and auditors that look at what we do and what we deduct and what our intent is and what is kosher and what is not kosher, what pushes the envelope, what tears the envelope. And this is a wonderful communal annual ritual that we perform as Americans in the spring for those of you who have not filed for the automatic extension. We also do our fundraising here, as Mike indicated, in the spring for very much the same reasons. Except for last night, most of the snow has melted. The seeds have been sown. The harvest is not yet in. But we look at what community is. Whether it's a community of a church, a synagogue, a mosque, whether it's a community of a town, a city, a state, a nation. And we understand that there are things that we cannot do for ourselves. That everybody needs to chip in if we're going to have a post office. And if we're going to have a post office, enjoy it now because your grandchildren won't. But everyone has to chip in if there are going to be roads, if there's going to be an FAA, if there's going to be FDA that's going to check on the health and safety of whether food or drugs or other things that are communal, that we all know that we have to participate together. We know that most of us, no matter how wealthy, can't create a museum. We have to work together in our charities, whether for museums or hospitals or helping universities. And in some ways, it's a tragedy that our universities are charities and don't come from the general welfare of our tax system, but that we need to participate in creating things together. And we all have responsibilities to help each other create programs and places that are meaningful to us. And doing it alone is usually not an option. But working together, we create extraordinary things. We create them here in our congregation. We create them here at Beth Tikva. We create them in our Fullerton Interfaith Ministers Association. We create them with the wonderful programs of former FICE and CareerWise and all of the ways that we come together to multiply our individual efforts, our individual abilities, our individual resources and talents in order to project our values, to make our values flesh. Without joining together, there's no community of any kind. And so all of us, whether we're talking about the budget drive here or we're talking about the paying of our taxes, all of us are involved in an important conversation with ourselves about what we value and how we create those values and how we propagate those values in actions from our lives into other lives that touch other lives. So cooperation is what makes us human, our ability to communicate, our ability to work together, not simply in hunting and gathering, not simply in war, but in building good things for one another and making a positive difference in the world. So taxing, a sense of responsibility is important. Well, how about the death part of this? Well, that's a little hard to get enthusiastic about. Most of us are uncomfortable with the idea of our finitude. And yet, we all know that scarcity and value are related. As Marvel wrote to his coy mistress, if there were world enough and time enough, this day would not make a difference. We could just wait. But we don't have all the world. We don't have all the time. We have this time. We have this moment. We have this chance to be and to do and to build and to leave something for the next generation. We have the opportunity consciously to leave legacies, to leave, in a sense, our footprints in the sands of time. Now, I know that there are a lot of people that don't like that poem, that find it the kind of verbal Kincaid of just being a little too sweet. But as an image, it's true. We walk here and we leave footprints, but as Shakespeare said, neither marble nor the gilded monuments of man are going to last forever. The marble will wear away. The gilded monuments will erode. The footprints will be washed away by time and tide and wind, and yet that we have walked here, that we have left footprints, that what we have chosen to do and support or not do and not support has consequences out there in the world that last beyond our lives. We all know this. We know this in terms of children. We should know it in terms of institutions. We are all at every stage in our life in the legacy business, in the business of deciding by our choices what it is that we are going to leave. Last week, when I did the dedication of the children, it's very important that one part of it is so tremendously important to tell parents and to tell children and to tell each other that our examples are the most important things we do. It is by our actions that we are known. Words are actions, but they're seedling actions. Actions are followed by commitments of time, of energy, of passion, of sweat, of tears. They are all of those things that we do. Our finitude should remind us to get going, to take that walk, both for our health and for the health of the larger community, to contribute to the greater good, to understand that this time is so precious and we give it meaning with our passions and with our commitments. One of the things, and commitments are things that you have to do all the time. I'm sorry that I dropped my I've pledged because I'm not going to take a chance of bending down. I have every confidence I could. I have no confidence I could get back up again. But I have perfect confidence that I'd get a lot of help. And some of it would be competent. If Danzig tries to help me, we're both on the ground, which helps no one. So you actually have to make choices about good things that you want to do and good things that you have to step back from and say, you know, I've got a back as lousy as Dobra's, so I'm not going to get down there and do it. That's the common sense of when we look at our lives and our resources and we make our decisions. Death and taxes. Well, we celebrate, in a sense, death in the springtime as we do the taxes. It would be too depressing to do and talk about death in the winter, in the fall when things are falling and the leaves are turning and the world seems to be dying. In the dead of winter, northern hemisphere, is the same problem. But in the springtime, we can bear to look at our mortality because the world is coming back to life. The earth is coming back to life. The trees are coming back to life. And we can understand that we are not apart from nature. We are apart of nature. As a clergyman, I have learned three primary things in all of the work that I have done with people in the dying process. I want to share briefly those three things. One is that death is not always the enemy. It does indeed remind us of the scarcity of time and get us moving. But as the Unitarian poet Walt Whitman wrote, sometimes death is a friend. It is approach when thou must needs come, approach strong, deliver us. Because there are times at the end of life that it is welcome to close our eyes and to melt into whatever is next. And of course, whatever is next depends on your tradition and your society. Some people love the idea of the continuation of life as an eternal concert of hymns and harps. Tends not to be the Unitarian view. In the West, in general, we don't like the idea of our finitude. And we, again, as a different poet wrote, we talk about the mighty dooms that we have imagined for the mighty dead. All glorious tales that we have heard or read, an immortal fountain of eternal drink pouring unto us from heaven's brink. That's the Western attitude. We want to keep going. The Eastern attitude is, for the most part, what do I have to do to get out of here? If I'm reincarnated and I'm here, it's a mark not of accomplishment, but of failure. Two very different views. But what we share together is that this moment counts. The other thing that I want to share is I have never been with a dying person who was scared. So any of you who are out there scared, you're probably okay. Because when you are in that moment of extremis that I've been in personally, although the death seems not to have been final at that point, when I was in an ER and hit with Karari so that I couldn't breathe and I believed that I was dead and I saw my body and all the Kubler-Ross things. I meant to send her a note during that moment, but it seemed not as important when I started breathing again. But I have never been with anybody who at the time was scared. The idea that we at some point understand our finitude. Now, most people have an idea that they're going to close their eyes here and open them somewhere else. Some people have the idea it's just blessed sleep. Socrates laid it out both ways, and either way that it wasn't particularly frightening. And I think that that is where most people are. What I have learned is that our lives make a difference, that our time together makes a difference, that what we do makes a difference in the world, and how we are together helps us engage the world. There is no one in this room who does not get to the point of emotional fatigue and say, it's not worthwhile. I'm going to turn off the news. I'm going to turn away from the hunger, the homelessness, the anger, the rage in the world because I just can't take it. There's no one that does not come to that moment from time to time. And that's why we come together, to be reminded that it is okay to become weary. It is okay to take a break, that our energies and our commitments have an ebb and a flow to them, that we can be helped and held by one another, that we come together not simply to pool our money into the form of programs, but to pool our energy. And when you're too tired, I can take the baton and run half a lap. And when I stumble and fall, I know that someone will pick me up. Death and taxes, they are inevitable. If we see it as cooperation and the precious nature of this moment, we hold it in a cherished position as opposed to those two terrible inevitabilities. They are the two wonderful opportunities. Let us be stronger than we are alone, and let the choices that we make in this moment of light continue through others, through programs, through people fed, people helped, people respected, institutions strengthened. That's the business we're all in. Appreciate today and build and leave something for tomorrow.